We're getting our paper jam on. All this and more coming up on This Week in Retro.
High resolution color graphics.
This land of high technology.
The revolution in technology that made the information age possible.
Those kids are not afraid of computers.
Zed's dead, baby. Zed's dead.
Whoa, slow down there, technology.
And inkjet fury.
All these stories and more coming up on today's show.
Up-to-date news for out-of-date tech.
Hello, Dave. Welcome to show 168. How are you this week?
I'm very well. How are you, Neil?
I'm very well. Another busy week. But I've had a really enjoyable week doing things that I think really represent well what happens at the mill. As well, you know, of course, top of that tree is recording This Week in Retro. You know, that's always the priority every week,
yep.
Dave.
Yeah.
And then below that, Richard's been working on the Computer Space Replica. So episode one of that went out on the Arcade Archive a couple of weeks back. Mm. And this is our attempt to 3D print and create a one-to-one scale replica of the first arcade game, first commercial arcade game. And I've been watching Richard and helping him sand, watching him paint. And now he's doing the resin. I don't think I can say all this because will it be out? No, it won't be out by the time this show goes out. But basically, he's doing all of the things that are making this now look like the real fiberglass thing from back in the day. Mm. So he's been working on that. I've been working on what will be out by the time the show goes out, which is the Commodore PC-20 restoration, which you'll remember came in last year, covered in bird poo, rotting from the inside out. Mm-hmm. And we've worked with Chrissy, Rob, and Ian at the Board Folk to trace and recreate that original motherboard and build a brand new motherboard to restore this system. So I think between those two projects this week, it really represents what we're trying to do in the name of preservation, where we can't preserve, recreation, mm-hmm. and preservation of the experience to then share with people that come and visit. So it's been a really sort of satisfying week in that way to work on all those things. I've enjoyed it.
Well done.
And the first people that will get to try Computer Space will be this Sunday when we've got the patron day at the cave.
Is it that near to finished?
If all goes well this week with the finishing touches, it will be finished, and anyone that wants to be recorded playing it for the final episode,
Costardo style,
we'll capture them. Costardo, well, he'll be there on Sunday, so yeah, we'll have to get Costardo's reaction.
Is he going to be a thumbnail again?
Surely. He's a man of infinite thumbnails, Costardo. For those who don't know, he appeared in the what was the Nintendo thing?
The Nintendo wasn't the Play Choice. It was the
kiosk. I can't remember. Yeah, the kiosk one. Now. Yeah,
and someone accused it of being a needlessly clickbait thumbnail. No. In fact, that was the real Costardo.
It was looking shocked and amazed. So we'll get some more shots like that, and he instantly became a meme and a sticker on the Discord server. Thanks, Costardo. Looking forward to seeing you on Sunday. Anyway, what have you been up to this week, Dave? You haven't spoken of pinball of late. Is that obsession behind you now?
I have. I did speak to Final Fight, who I've bought the pinball table from. He's arranging for Martin to pick it up, and he says it'll be a few weeks before Martin is in Scotland, so I'm patiently waiting in that. I'm in no particular rush. What I have got, though, is some new big box games.
Oh, so what have we got
there?
These
came from Polyplay in Germany, but they're in English. So we have The Curse of Rabenstein, Tristram Island, and The Ghosts of Blackwood Manor. And they're all Amstrad CPC new disc games. So there's an Amstrad CPC 3-inch disc in there. And if you look at two of them, do they look like familiar box tiles to you?
Well, they look very Infocom-like. It's hard to see because your camera's breaking up a bit, so I'll have to watch back at the proper recording.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can, even in that blurry state, I can make out Infocom style.
Yeah, so they've gone after the Infocom style. So if you look at, for example, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy here, they've gone after that style, which it just makes it feel a little bit more authentic. So these are games for my CBC. They're all adventure games, all text adventures. So I'm looking forward to playing those when I find some clear headspace where I won't be thinking about all the other things going on in my life instead.
Yeah, I think some of those might come up in the Q&A later that we're doing for the This Week in Retro patrons. Yeah. We'll record that after today's show. Pure text adventures or any images in there?
There are some images in them, but it's not even like King's Quest where it matters where you are on the screen. It's just typing with a few images to help you.
Mystery House style,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, set off your imagination.
The final use of the Commodore PC-20 was text adventures because while it's capable of CGA, I've got this gorgeous Commodore, I think it's a 1402 or 1401 mm-hmm. display, which is monochrome, and it sits beautifully on the case. And as the screen updates, the text scrolls, it just glows beautifully, just fades very slowly compared to other screens. So it almost looks like an effect you'd see on a movie or something, but it's genuine. Phosphor.
You mentioned it's monochrome. What colour of monochrome?
Oh, just black and white. Yeah, right, yeah. It's not an amber one or anything.
Yeah, that would be amber. The PCW that I've got is green, but I think amber is the best colour. Maybe
I could put like an amber cellophane over the screen or something. Anyway, that's my week. That's your week, unless you've got anything else to add, Dave.
No, not this week. Nope. Shall we get straight into it?
We will. Although nice Atari T-shirt today, I must add.
Have you played your Atari to Dave?
Let's go into story one.
Pulp Fiction had loads of iconic lines, and Zed's dead is one of them. Why is it not Z's dead if it's from the USA? And does that mean it's okay to say Zed instead of Z when talking about some US stuff? I'm going to do it and no one can stop me.
You're an idiot.
Yeah, thank you. As you may have heard, the Z80 processor is being discontinued. So that's the Zilog one, not the Zilog one. A quick history on it. It was thought up by Federico Fagin in 1974. He'd left Intel disillusioned with how they did things. First working samples in 1976 and on sale in July 1976. This was the project that started Zilog from a startup, and within 2 years of the Z80, they had a thousand employees and their own chip fabrication factory. So it was an instant success.
He wanted to stay at Intel, but they wouldn't let him work for more.
Oh no! That's quite clever, at least.
Thank you. Carry on.
Wikipedia says, although used in that role, the ZAC also became one of the most widely used CPUs and in desktop computers and home computers from the 1970s to the mid-1980s. And I'm going to say it was still clearly very widely used beyond the mid-80s in home computers. Many of them were launched in after 1985, featuring the Z80, presumably because it was low cost and it was good enough.
Yeah, now I've seen this story doing the rounds, but there's one headline that stood out for me, one article about the retirement of the Z80. It uses the headline, "The processor used in Pac-Man is being discontinued." Talk about downplaying it. The processor used in Pac-Man, come on.
I know. Now, since I don't know the technical side of it all, I asked someone who does, my friend Stephen, who's also known as Terrible Fire. And he knows his onions when it comes to CPUs. And he says, although the 6502 beat the Z80 to market by a year, and we were only talking about the 6502 a couple of weeks ago, the actual intended competitor for the Z80 was the Intel 8080. And in fact, the Z80 was designed to be binary compatible with the 8080. So that means that code written for Intel CPU would work on the Z80 too. And it meant things like the CPM operating system and even Intel's own PLM compiler. He also told me if not for terrible mistakes with fabrication, it would have come out nearly a year earlier. And importantly, he also designed it to need 5 volts, not to need 5 volts minus 5 and 12 volts like the 8080 did. So that made it much easier to integrate into things. There's an advert I've put then, which hopefully Duncan can show on the screen, which shows the advertising for the Z80 went directly against the 8080, showing all the things that were better about it. And it was a better version of the 8080 than the 8080 was. he actually made it with some copy protection traps in it. So I didn't realize this, but in order to make it difficult to copy, because apparently Japanese chip fabrication, it was common to take a chip and do your own knockoff of it, he put these traps in the silicone. So I don't quite understand that, but very clever all the same.
I'd like to know more about that. That sounds fun.
Yeah. And it was only possible because Exxon funded it. So Exxon, the oil company. So during the oil crisis in the 70s, few companies had lots of money around. But of course, Exxon did. And they were silently behind the scenes acquiring companies to take on IBM. Now, I won't go into it today, but he fought and fought. Eventually, he left Zilog to go on to other things in the 80s. And because of all that, the Z80 failed to be succeeded by something else, which would have replaced the 8086, as the 16-bit CPU in IBM machines had things going better. The Z800, the Z8000, the Z80000 might have had the level of success the Z80 had in 16-bit machines, perhaps, or 32-bit machines as well.
Yeah, I've come across the Z8000 or 8001 in the prototype Commodore 900 machine that's floating around the cave. But by that point, it was all about the 8086, and it was all about Motorola's 68000 fighting it out at that point. There wasn't really any... Well, Zilog wasn't really in the fight, was it,
no,
for that era?
No,
yeah,
no.
As you said.
However, they continued to sell the Z80 for a long time. Well, up till now, in fact, because we're making it discontinued. So the Z80 had a long life, but it didn't go beyond the 8-bit. It's been in all sorts of embedded things, and it might be very weak compared to today's modern CPUs, but that doesn't mean it's not a powerful computer in its own rights for what you might want to do with it. For me, though, the special place for the Z80 is the same as you, Neil. It's in our Amstrad CPCs.
Oh, yes.
And it went in loads of micros. Wikipedia lists 86, although some are just model variants. Here's some highlights. The CPC, PCW, the Bandai RX, the Cambridge Z88, the Coleco Adam, the Commodore 128, various different Dick Smiths, the Dubna 48K, the Exidy Sorcerer, which I think wins the best name, the Enterprise, the Grundy New Brain, the Hector, the Hobbit, and the Humdinger. The what? Jupiter, what a trio, I know. Jupiter Ace, the Mattel Aquarius, the Memotech MTX, the Micro B, the MSX, the Philips P2000, and other Philips machines, the RM380Z, because they're a British company, not Z, the Ringo R470, the Sam Coupe, the Tatung Einstein, the TRS-80, and of course, what I think it's most famous for, the home of the Z80, the ZX Spectrum. What are we going to do without Z80s, Neil?
What are we going to do? The Grundy New Brain always makes me laugh. Did you use the term Grundy where you grew up for what others would call a wedgie?
No.
Oh, yeah. In our playground, the shout of Grundy was, it just meant wedgie.
Oh, so, use wedgie.
A wedgie new brain, yeah. Z80, well, let's not panic. Let's not go panic buying for toilet paper and Z80s, because currently there are, just looking at Mouser, 1,381 in stock. So plenty of Z80s to go around, everyone. You mentioned there that it was very weak compared to modern CPUs, but I would argue its consistency is its very strength in the modern day. I've got no idea if this story is true, but an old lecturer when I was at uni said to us that the Z80 was still used in NASA, and this was in the late 90s, by the way. And he said that it was used because it had been around for so long that every single glitch, bug, or foible had been discovered, and therefore its behavior could be 100% predicted. It provided enough processing power for the task that they wanted to do with minimal power usage. And so, because when you add all those things up, it was far safer than slapping in the latest CPU for the sake of it. And that always stuck with me. So it's the Z80 has been trusted. It's been reliable. It's been a predictable stalwart of industrial applications for many decades. Many decades more, in fact, than microcomputers. Add to that synths, add to that, you know, all kinds of things that the Z80 pops up in. It really is everywhere. What will we do without them? Well, as I mentioned, there's plenty in stock in Mouser. There must be billions of them produced. there's going to be plenty of old as well as new ones still floating around. They're not going to vanish anytime soon. And beyond that, I think there'll be plenty of clones. There'll be FPGA alternatives. There'll be many ways you can just drop in a Z80 if you need one. So will the Z80 truly ever die is really the question. You can discontinue it, but I don't think it will ever die. We'll see. Kind of like an Amiga in that respect, Dave.
Yeah, I don't think they'll bring it back.
And also, it can't die because once the Texas Instrument calculator collectors get wind of this, there is going to be a riot. There's going to be a riot.
More mention of them later on, in fact. Something else Stephen said to me, just to close this off, he says, to be honest, and you can quote me, so he said he could quote me, so I am, I've been chatting to a pal here in Glasgow about just straight etching Z80s onto silicon. The tech is available, it's just the chemicals are nasty. So he's going to make his own Z80s. That's how ridiculously talented he is.
Can you do that in bulk at home? Surely that's just going to be a small run.
Small run, yeah. It is a small run. And I don't think he'll end up doing it because I don't think these will ever vanish. You can still buy things like Yamaha sound chips that we use in these old computers, and they haven't made, as far as I know, for a very long time. There's just enough of them around. So there's going to be machines, if the price of the Z80 goes up, then when they're recycling these old, anything it is, old tills, old point of sale, old embedded devices, they'll take the Z80s out and sell them. So I think they'll still be around.
Yeah, and just think about, like you said, the sound chip. Think about the other things that people have reproduced. People have gone to the lengths, for example, of reverse engineering and creating new ULAs for a ZX Spectrum. Now, if they're going to go to those lengths, they're going to knock out Z80s, surely.
So I don't think it's wise that we all go and get ourselves 20 or 30 Z80s just in case. I think if you want a Z80, maybe the best time to buy it is in 2 years' time, once people start to realise, wish I hadn't bought 20 of these, because everyone else has got 20.
Yeah. Current price for reference on Mouser, if you're buying one, £7.65. If you're buying 100, £5.77. Maybe we'll come back to that one day. when they're going for £1,000 each, Dave. What do you reckon?
Yeah, and I'll look like a right idiot, but yeah. I don't think it'll happen.
Z80 is the new Bitcoin.
We are sponsored, thank you very much, by Pixel Addict Magazine. What's Pixel Addict Magazine?
Well, it's a magazine about pixels, for addicts of pixels, pretty much covering the kind of things that we cover here. Anything to do with retro, it's a retro lifestyle magazine. So that doesn't necessarily just mean microcomputers. It means the whole culture around it, the people, the places, all in one convenient daily magazine, Dave.
Daily. It comes out every day, doesn't it?
Yeah, every day.
Every day of the week.
800 pages a day.
Yeah. Twice in a Saturday.
Yes. Yeah. First post and second post.
Yeah. Every day, also 6 weekly. And the latest issue is the Tandy special. We're due a new issue soon, so I don't know what exciting delights they're going to bring to us in the new issue. But you can go and buy it at pixel.addict.media, where you can buy a physical copy to be sent to you. You can touch it with your paws. You can have a PDF. You can take out a subscription. You can renew your subscription now. Thank you very much for sponsoring us, pixeladdict.media.
I would like to thank Piero75 for submitting this next story, which is a really interesting article posted on theconversation.com. Not a website I've been to before. Have you been to theconversation.com before, Dave?
I went this morning, but only to read this.
Only to read my link, yes. And it's all about the resurgence of analog technology use, the benefits of it, and the pace of change around it. Now, in it, authors Michael Beverland and Gianna Eckhart explore this through, first of all, through vinyl record purchasing habits, which have been on the rise for some time. We've discussed it on the show before. But just because it comes up, here's some interesting facts for you, Dave. 6 million records were sold in the UK last year. That is up 11.7% on the previous year. 461 independent record stores are now on our high streets. That's a third more than a decade ago. And that, of course, doesn't include the high street chains like HMV. Who are clinging on. I think I shared with you my story of going to an HMV recently. It was not a pleasant experience. So do support those independent record stores, I think. Taylor Swift, your favorite, Dave, now accounts for one in every 15 records sold, although I suspect that number will increase with the release of her new album. And last year, Metallica, you've probably not heard of them, Dave, they were selling so many records after 16 years of annual increased vinyl record sales year on year that they decided to buy their own record factory and do it themselves. Pretty cool if you can do that.
I think I might be cheaper buying my own record factory to make Metallica records than buying them at the price of... I'll come on to it in my bit later.
Oh, okay. I was
angry at the prices of them when I looked this morning.
Oh, dear. So, yeah, there's no doubt that people are enjoying listening to music in this way, but the article explores other ways in which people are pressing the brake pedal and enjoying what Gianna terms...
She got a sister.
Maybe. She sounds great. You beat me to it.
Yes.
She calls this consumer deceleration. So slow shopping, quiet rooms, and a more enjoyable pace around everything.
Yeah.
The article then explores analog, synth, and camera users and why they choose to use these things instead of a laptop and some plugins or a digital camera. And just like listening to a record, it's all about the balance of effort and reward. A good result is far more rewarding when you've put the time into prep and you're working with a big physical synth with lots of dials and knobs, or this film camera with a finite number of shots and the cost associated with processing the images. People seem to find effort and the appeal of slow more rewarding in these circumstances, and I get it. I absolutely do. Layered on top of that is the happy accident. I'm not talking about Bob Ross. I'm talking about, well, maybe I am. I'm talking about the unexpected results through accidents. For example, when a Soviet-era camera, is an example given in the article, lets in too much light, or a dial gets knocked on a Korg synth and a cool sound comes out of it. Some people find this whole much more tactile process helps them to be more creative. And I have to say I get that too. Anytime I've attempted to make music beyond using a tracker, which for me, and this is not the same for everyone, but for me, it's more like sampling. I'm finding samples, I'm arranging samples. Whenever I've been allowed to sit in front of someone's synth and twiddle the knobs and hit the keys, it's a much more organic creative process for me. You know, you sort of muck around purely because I'm not musically trained or anything. So I'm purely making mistakes until I hear a mistake I like, basically. And I like that a lot. The article doesn't go so far as to venture into our favoured field of slow computing, though. It's perhaps not analog enough for the authors, but I think an awful lot of the same applies. We pine, for example, for physical media, and we delight at the chance to buy a physical game. Magazines, like what, Dave? Like what magazine?
Like pixel.addict.media.
Magazines like Pixel Addict are certainly a dying format, but many of us would still rather thumb through one and read the month's developments all at once in a nice package rather than be bombarded hour by hour online by a million people fighting for our attention, as Dave is now bouncing up and down. Dave, what do you want to say?
We say magazines are a dying form, but I think they're coming back in some ways. I mean, Pixel Addict came back. There's now more magazines around in our hobby than ever were before. I think magazines are going to go through a resurgence, I think.
Well, part and parcel of this whole thing. Will we ever reach the giddy heights of 20 different computer magazines on the shelf every month? No. Probably not, but perhaps that's for the best. We'll have a choice of concentrated quality that we can enjoy.
Well, I think if you think about going to a website to read articles, it's trying to get you to do something else instead. The adverts, the do this instead, do that instead. Whereas if you've got a magazine in your hand, it can't do that. So I think people appreciate that now when perhaps we'd forgotten about it.
It's easy to turn the page on an advert in a magazine, isn't it? Yeah. Move on. We also, we enjoy the limitations of old platforms. We enjoy seeing how much developers can squeeze out of them in contrast to the endless upgrade cycle. For example, when perfectly usable software packages are retired and then you're forced to buy the latest version and then the hardware that you need to run it only to achieve exactly the same result at the end of it.
On a subscription.
And all the tools that you knew are still there. They've just been moved to a different place on the toolbar. Infinitely frustrating. So there is joy, there is space and mindfulness in just slowing down and enjoying these technologies for what they are. And to some, what they are is better than their modern counterparts. not all, but to some, for example, fashion magazines, some of them now, and fashion companies are leaning towards people that use old cameras because they give a different look to the picture that they seem to enjoy more at the moment. Is that a current fashion? Is that a current trend? Or is that a long-term thing related to the skill involved or the time taken in framing the shot with something that costs more? I don't know. But that's just a thing that's happening, also quoted in the article. One final quote from the article. It says, Phil Oakey, frontman of 80s synth pop pioneers The Human League, mentioned that a new analog moment was happening. And this was in an interview in 2011. Gianna says, we wondered if this increased interest in obsolete formats would be a passing fad or something more enduring. That was 13 years ago, Dave. Is the future one where the cutting edge is no longer as important to us as we've been told it should be, because we're always told you've got to be on the cutting edge? Or can you think of ways to decelerate with tech? And does this mean, once again, the Amiga never really died?
So, a bit of bubble bursting to start with here. I've read articles quoting that something like 50% of vinyl record buyers don't own a player. So they're not buying it to play the music on a record player. But then again, why are they buying it? They want to hold, to touch, and to see the music that they love. So they're buying it to have the physical thing, which is nearly the same thing as playing a record player. So I do understand it.
We've had conversations on Discord where people have bought, for example, the Hoffman record from my shop, and then said, can anyone recommend a record player? Yeah. So they just want the object, which is really nice.
Yeah. Holding a record is nothing like buying it on iTunes or Amazon. I also think people will bounce back off the old tech. There's definitely some of it can be enjoyed with a little bit extra effort, but there's also reasons why you wouldn't continue to it. I'm not sure that everyone that buys a traditional film camera will give up using their phone to take pictures. Maybe they'll use one or two films of it and then stop. But I think there's definitely people going back to it and then maybe not. They're not sticking with it.
It comes to circumstances, doesn't it?
Yeah.
For example, if someone backed into you in the car park and pranged your car, you're going to get your phone out. You're not going to say, hang on a minute, let me get my Polaroid out.
Yeah. Put a flash cube in. I have a record player, though. I bought 40 albums for it. In fact, I was complaining yesterday about the cost of albums. It's about 25 quid for a vinyl album, or about a third of that for a CD. And a CD is perhaps a halfway point between modern and vinyl. You still hold it in your hand. It's not as nice as a record. It's not as much effort, but you still hold it in your hand. You don't need to use a modern device for it. I do prefer records, though.
Yeah, I mean, we were all at that point when CDs were around where vinyl records were just mum and dad's old hat, not interested.
That's right.
CD,
that's right.
CD all the way. And I've got a huge collection of CDs. But it's something to do with the pace of modern life that's driven me to vinyl records and enjoying that experience.
I do prefer records overall, though, and I will stick with it. I just hope the price gap narrows. But I had a look at Metallica albums on Amazon, and I bought all their albums. I say all their albums, I mean all the good ones, before they went in a different direction. And I bought them all on CD, secondhand, no problems at all. They polished them so they worked fine, cost me buttons. Metallica albums on Amazon are between £35 and £40 each new, and that's from Amazon. That's not someone scalping. That's what Metallica want you to pay for them. I'm sure I got all their albums for the price of one vinyl record. And those are single albums that made back when vinyl records dictated the length of albums. So you'll notice sometimes when you buy an album on vinyl, it'll come in two records, and that's because it was made in the CD era where they wanted to have 70 minutes on the record, whereas if it was made in the vinyl album era, it's a shorter album to make sure it fits in one sheet of wax.
Do you want to know how much Taylor Swift's latest record is?
How much is it?
It's £44.97 on Amazon for a vinyl record.
And what? How much for a compact disc?
Oh, I wonder if she actually does it.
Surely they'll do compact
£14.99.
Yeah.
So there's a £30 difference.
£30 just to get a bit of cardboard. Mm. I think there's some of them scalping going on there of from the producers of people who want the nice physical thing to hold. They're charging a real premium for it.
Well, it certainly, it certainly costs more to produce a vinyl because this is a lower quantity thing and a more involved thing to produce than the bit of CD, you know, a bit of plastic.
30 quid. You made some vinyl records that cost 30 quid.
$29.99 I sell the double record for.
Did it cost you 30 quid to make it, though? Are you losing a penny every time?
No, there's obviously a markup on that.
If they're selling the CD for 14 quid and the vinyl for 40, or they're adding 30 quid on for the vinyl, are they making extra profits there? Are they extracting more from people who want the vinyl?
Yeah. In the quantity that someone like Taylor Swift is making them, yes. Yeah, there's going to be a big, big old markup on that.
It's just a shame that you have to pay that premium to get the extra thing, but that's the way it is. The Amiga, broadly speaking, did die. But that says more about us than it says about the Amiga. It says that almost all of us abandoned everything year by year. We were always chasing the new thing. Anything behind us was left behind before coming back to embrace it again. And I know not everybody did. I know a small number of people kept with it. But the reality is that you could barely give them away not so long ago, the Amigas. And now, of course, people have come back to it. So our love for the Amiga perhaps died. That's the way to put it. Before coming back to it and realizing, do you know, we don't need to be chasing the very newest thing all the time. As for ideas to decelerate with tech, I'm open to what our listeners suggest, but I've made myself a space in the house where I can read a book and listen to records without having to use a computer or a phone. I have an all-in-one 24-inch touchscreen thing that's angled like you would when reading a book or a magazine for reading magazines.
That's a computer, Dave.
Yeah, but it's so weak that I wouldn't use it on the internet. And as a rule, I've never used it to do anything other than reading magazines.
Yeah.
So I have to keep it as that. Next to it is a PCW, an Amstrad PCW. Nice. And I bought that with the intention of using it for Infocom Z Engine type games, which lots of modern interaction fiction does. So there's a huge library of games I could play on that with a lovely...
green screen.
That's right.
With the intention of, or have you actually got that set up? Because it feels like that's been sat there for quite some time.
It's been sat there for a long time and I've not got around to it. Like other things, I've not got around to it yet.
Time passes.
I know. Where's just can I stop things for, maybe if I stop the clock for 6 months and nothing else in the world changes, I'll catch up on everything. But the whole idea of that room is to do the things that I like, but to distance myself from phones and general internet, Discord, news, Reddit, all the rest of it. And I actually find when I do that, I find I get more from a couple of hours than I would do elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. So many distractions in the modern day. And I don't think we sound like a couple of moany old men when we talk about this. I think the proof that others feel the same is in things like the increased record sales and the way people like to decelerate their own experiences and focus on what they're doing. And I think it's going to happen more and more.
It's not us complaining about the modern world so much as us saying, this is how I deal with my own shortcomings when it comes to attention span and concentration and relaxation and mindfulness. It's all about how I deal with myself, not about me complaining that technology is getting it wrong.
Yeah, and maybe the source of some of those problems that we have, the lack of attention, comes from our adoption of technology in the past. Yeah. But now we're at a point where we say, okay, how do we use this technology to live our best lives, if you like?
Yeah.
We'll end with a review, Dave, and this is a little game called Taylor Swift Review or This Week in Retro Review. It says, I was extremely disappointed to learn how bad the language was. Purchased for my young daughter, there was no warning. Lots of F-bombs in here.
Oh, one star. Oh, no, it's not us. We would never say that, would we, Duncan? You would bleep it out.
Correct. That's Taylor Swift's new album. And someone else also says, the album did not state that it had explicit lyrics. I bought this for my niece and expected the explicit sticker, but it did not have one, so I thought it was clean. Oh, no, dear.
Was that not a legal thing, or is that just a voluntary thing they do?
I don't know. Yeah, that was quite iconic, wasn't it? Warning, explicit lyrics, the black and white sticker.
It felt like it was marketing. Now that I think about it, that's, of course, Taylor Swift again.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. We will come back to this a little later in our question of the week. So get thinking about the ways you like to decelerate in the modern world.
Thank you very much. Housekeeping this week. We have two new patrons to welcome, both from the People's Democratic Republic of Canada.
Wow.
Frank, who what was last week's guest, and Mark, who is your and I friends. So thank you for joining up, guys. Thank you for coming, twirlers.
It was, in fact, Mark that was asking for record player recommendations. I hope you don't mind me outing you, Mark, but it was him who we had the conversation with. And because our Discord server is so well behaved and everyone was so nice, it was a friendly chat rather than, you know, I worried when he asked, what record player should I get, that it might get into the, oh, actually, you need this one, you need this one, you should have this needle, you need this, you need, you know, this brand, stay away from that. It was all very pleasant. So no snobbery on the Discord server. Discord.gg/RMC retro if you want to join the conversation and set Mark straight.
Tungsten Orchid picked up a glitch with a question of the week from last week and asked if there won't be a tour that week. It was just a glitch. It's corrected now. This is, of course, an episode last week. You probably listened to it. But we have said if we're going to miss one, we will try to update YouTube through the community tab, the subreddit, and also from our Twitter account, which is @weekretro. So there's three places we would notify about it. We know it's a disappointment if you're expecting one and don't see it, so we will try to let you know. We're recording the patron Q&A finally today, Neil.
We are.
That's some extra stuff at the end today.
One of many, isn't it?
I don't know how long it'll take us. We'll find out.
Okay.
If you have any suggestions for guests, please do let us know. I'm booking a new set of guests just now, but I did get a little behind on it, so I'm open to your suggestions. And there's been a few comments from people encouraging Neil to do the CEX challenge. So will you do the sex challenge?
I will. And Holly listened to last week's show and said to me, you've got to do it. What are we going to pick? What are we going to take out the storeroom? So this is where we've got to take something to CEX to try out their retro repair service. And I think we might take something broken. And then I think we might also take something where obviously the batteries have just run out or something like that. And see
maybe an internal ribbon cables disconnected.
Yeah, something really simple and just see what they conclude, put them to the test. And, of course, CEX listens to the show, so now we've ruined the whole thing. But we'll see what
happens. Employee. Can you wear some kind of hidden camera device to do it?
Oh, yeah, I could do.
BBC Panorama.
Walk into CEX with a drone following me. They'll never know. What's in your briefs, Dave?
Pajaco lets us know that you can play Sonic on a calculator. Whoa. It's actually Sonic 2, and you can play it on a Texas Instruments TI-84 Plus. Remember I said earlier on, it come up again?
Is that running on a Z80?
Must be running a Z80. So go get some onion rings. He eats the onion rings. Is that what Sonic does? He eats the onion rings.
Yeah.
Is that it?
That's right, yeah. Deep fried onion rings. Sadly, this week, we saw the passing of David Thorpe, a Spectrum artist. This was submitted by Starcade 2084. He passed in January at the age of 84, and news spread around social media sites this week. There's a really good tribute to him, apparently, on Binary Zone. And David was behind some wonderful game loading screens, and you can see a list of them using the link in the show notes. Very distinctive style. And yeah, he was. He will be greatly missed, and many, many Spectrum fans enjoyed his work. So thoughts to David's family.
Thanks to Juicy Cow, a great name. Juicy Cow tells us that the tourists have taken everything. We mentioned the phenomenon before in Japan, where their prices for retro are low enough that people are buying up whole job lots. There's an article on it linked by Juicy Cow.
Is this people going to Japan, or is this the rise of services like Buy and these auction sites?
I don't know if it's a bit of both. They're blaming the tourists for the lack of retro. I don't know if it's really true. I'm remembering people blaming you for the price rise of anything you cover on the channel and all the rest of it. People just like to grumble that they can't get it for buttons anymore.
They do. The Commodore 64 can outperform IBM's Quantum system, according to 42 Nobody 42. Yeah, actually it can't. But a team of researchers are having a dig at the flaws in IBM's new quantum system. Lots of snark in the Tom's Hardware article, which is linked in the show notes. Just nice to see the Commodore 64. You know, is that the equivalent of Paul Logan stepping into the ring with Mike Tyson? The C64 against IBM's quantum system.
Is Paul Logan going to fight Mike Tyson?
Is it him or is it someone else? Is it Jake Logan?
Jake, I don't know. I don't know.
Someone's fighting Mike Tyson. Money has exchanged hands. Aye. You never know. The C64 might get a lucky swing.
Dr. Local submits a link from Top Gear of all places, and they've got an article remembering Stunts, which is a 1990 16-bit driving simulator.
No, we don't call it Stunts here.
What do we call it?
Well, the executable was still called Stunts, but in the UK it was called 4D Sports Driving. Complemented 4D Sports Boxing. But yeah, Stunts is what it's known as in the US.
I knew hard driving better. And as they say themselves, Stunts is a game that could be generously described as inspired by classic arcade title hard driving, and less generously described as entirely robbed from it.
Absolutely, it did. But for the home versions, it was the better game. Pajaco tells us that a lost N64 game has been preserved online. The headline says it could have been Nintendo's answer to Tomb Raider. Rika, is that how we say it? It's R-I-Q-A. Rika? Not quite sure. The video contained in this article isn't available. The YouTube account has vanished, so perhaps Nintendo have been litigious again and got it removed. But it just adds to the mystery. I want to see what that is now. What was Nintendo's answer to Tomb Raider?
Dr. Local submits an article that I didn't write. I promise I didn't write it, even though it's exactly my thoughts. 5 reasons why now is the best time to play retro DOS games. And I wish I'd picked it as a story now.
There's an appeal coming from the Peek and Poke Museum in Croatia. They're asking, do you have a PSX or a special edition coloured PlayStation console? This is the original PlayStation console, because they are putting together an exhibition celebrating 30 years of the PlayStation, and they'd like to display all of the special editions together in one place. They're offering to cover postage and insurance both ways if you're willing to let them borrow your PlayStation for the duration of the exhibition. Details are on the subreddit, and our very own Jason from the Dev Den is our go-between, because his wife's family's from Croatia, so they regularly visit, and he's got good contacts there with the museum, so he can help if you've got any questions. But look around you. Do you have a special edition one, and are you willing to allow Peek and Poke to display it to the public? Let us know. And then one final story in your briefs, Dave, comes from Dr. Local. Golden Axe has been picked for a TV show. I have a feeling we might talk about this in future when we get to see what it's all about.
No, do I have to watch it?
Coming from the same people that work on Rick and Morty and Star Trek Lower Decks, so expect plenty of good humour in this. I don't think they could do Golden Axe without lots of kicking of elves and you know, good humour. So we'll see what comes out of this.
It'll be all Gen Z or Gen Z.
Oh, come on, Dave. There'll be Jordan, references.
That happen? Oh, no. Save me from it. It'll ruin the games for me. There's loads more, but breaking news. As we are recording, we have a new twirler. So thank you very much, Matt, for signing up. It didn't escape our notice. You did it as we were talking.
Yeah, thank you.
Where can people go and see the stories, Neil?
reddit.com/thisweekinretro. If you'd like to become an official twirler and support the show, head to patreon.com/thisweekinretro. If you'd like to buy the official mug of the show, rmcretro.store. And if you'd like to pop round and see Dave, his address is...
I couldn't resist talking about printers, and I don't understand the attraction, really. But it's there for me too. I'm attracted to these horrible objects. Our friend Clint, who is LGR on YouTube, has a new video out calling, I bought a 25-year-old printer and regret everything. And everything is in capital letters. Everything. So I don't like to completely spoil videos we talk about here, especially as we don't really talk about the videos, or we're not constrained to that. We're using as a bit of a springboard, but I don't think I need to disguise that it ended badly for Clint. Now, he has printers. He has that lovely dot matrix that he's used in the past to print cool crab banners, but he said he didn't have a period correct looking standard inkjet printer, the type of thing you get for cheap along with your Gateway 2000 or your Packard Bell or your whatever Comet were selling at the cheapest computer at the time. Comet, not Comet.
Your £10 Lexmark printer with £40 inks.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and it comes with ink, enough ink to print 1.5 pages. Not enough yellow, can't print black and white. I'm sure you're all familiar with the channel, but he tends to be focused around the end of the 90s for the stuff he covers, and this video shows his frustration at the experience with typical LGR charm. So thank you for Squelch411 for submitting this with the comment, "Neil loves printers. He told us, all hail Neil." I barely use printers these days, usually just to print an address label, and even now Royal Mail offer to bring the label. Is that because home printers are fading away and people maybe not have as many as they used to? I know if you're sending a parcel through a parcel shop, they're offered to do it for you, so just turn up with your parcel and they'll print off the label in the shop. Other than the odd form that needs to be printed, or if it really needs it, a formal letter of complaint is best done by post. I have an inkjet on the network. I bought it in 2011. It's worked flawlessly ever since I bought it, and it was dirt cheap too. I think my experience is unique because I know my brother has taken a dozen to the dump over that time, and I'm forever having to sort out my dad's. But it's not the only one I own. Like Clint, I went a bit mad and bought a 90s printer. This was an A3 printer. So I'm not sure if that size is used in the USA. The closest I can find is called Tabloid. So it's a big printer. I never used it. It's up my loft. And maybe when I have enough space, I'll connect it up. But if I tend to have any more space, I just buy more big box games. Neil, do you hate printers? Do you love printers? You've told it. We've said you. Squelch says you love them.
I like printers. A3 for our American friends is about 16 by 12 inches, around about that sort of size. I think 16 by 12 would be the standard over there. A3 is like 16 and a half by 11 point something. It's very close, but slightly different. Anyway, that's the size you're thinking about. Do I like printers? Well, I'll tell you about my current printers. I've got a Zebra, I think it's a GD420, which is a little thermal label printer. Love that. Use that for all my postage. And price tickets and all sorts of things. And then I've got an Epson something or other, which tells you a lot about how I think about printers in the modern day. It's a something or other. Can't remember what model it is. It's got an Eco Tank, which I really like because you get like a big bottle. It's like a baby bottle of ink that you tip up and you put in and you leave it there while it glugs down in. And that minimizes waste. And it's actually quite a cheap way of buying ink. So it works, and I use it weekly, so it keeps all the lines clear and it doesn't dry up, and it works really nicely for me. But going back, the first printer I really liked, I say like loosely, a printer is a printer, it's a very functional object to me, but the one I really liked was the Canon BJ10, and that was one that fit in a laptop bag. And it was in a laptop bag with a 286 that I borrowed from a friend with a word processor called AMI Pro on it. So the sheer joy of taking a laptop out of a bag, a printer out of a bag, setting it up on a table wherever, a completely portable setup, and then prints actually coming out that looked like something on the screen rather than a dot matrix with its set fonts that you could have. This was amazing. This was a revelation to me. So I enjoyed that. Dot matrix always just kind of annoyed me, but this bubble jet was something else. So that was really nice. I do use my printer a lot, mostly now for museum signage. That's the purpose. I can't remember the last time I wrote a letter and printed it off or anything like that. It's museum signage, and it's printing the visitor list so that we've got that, because when visitors arrive at the museum, I don't want to be relying on technology at the time when they come in, because the last thing I want is for frustration at being their first thing that they get when they come to the cave. They can't find their e-ticket, or we can't find their name, or, you know, the Wi-Fi goes down or whatever. I just like to have a printed list and go through that. And then there's no problems, Dave.
Yeah, I think what you mean is you have a list of everyone coming, so you can ask them their name.
Yeah.
They say their name and they don't need to produce a ticket because you're expecting.
No frustrations. You don't want them to come in going, did he just accuse me of not having a ticket because something went into spam? Nobody wants that. And so use my printer for that.
And it does fit the ethos of the whole cave experience, which is as soon as you walk in, it's incredibly relaxing.
Yeah, it's inviting.
Such a nice place to be.
Yeah, that's how it should be. Is there a future, though, where printers don't exist, Dave? I personally think we are a long way off that happening.
If I really need to understand the manual for something, for example, I'll print it off. Mm-hmm. If I've got something I really need to know, I'll print it off because it's not the same as reading on a screen. As of yet, maybe we'll all have these Star Trek-like devices, these electronic ink devices where we can pick up which will be whichever bit of paper we need them to be at that time. But I don't think people want them yet, and the cost is huge. The screens aren't quite as good. They're easy to damage. We're miles away from that yet.
Give me a ring binder with 300 pages of e-ink pages and a USB port, and I can just, or even Wi-Fi, and I can just say, upload to my binder this report, walk away and read it with a cup of tea.
Yeah.
It's not impossible in the future, but we're certainly not living in that future right now.
You just need a ring binder that opens up, and you don't need 300 pages in it, but you need to be able to see where you are in the book and quickly move through the pages as if it was 300 pages.
No, I want to flick through physical e-ink pages, and I want to be able to use a stylus to circle things and write on things and then save that back to my computer. And then if I ever want to read it again in a ring binder, spit it out with all of my annotations on there as well.
What if what you want to do only has 50 pages? What if it has 450?
Well, then AI can flesh it out for me. Hey, that's the future, Dave.
Get a typewriter, Neil. Get a typewriter.
Yeah, get a typewriter. I'm going to decelerate and get a typewriter to write out all the guest names. But yeah, printers. Get back on topic, Dave.
I did speak to Clint about his video, and we always ask people if it's okay to use a little bit of footage from their videos as in the background when we're talking for the YouTube version. And of course, he says, sure, man, feel free to use anything you need. And he says, haha, man, I was so royally pissed after filming that. I truly was ready to move on to doing literally anything else. The sheer quantity of swearing in the raw footage. And Clint's video has done exceptionally well. I think it might even be on course to beat his Dune retrospective, which was a fantastic video that did really well because of the launch. And he says, I'm also shocked at the response. Over 4,500 comments is absurd. And this is only 2 days after it's released. But I guess it really is a universal experience. And he's right.
Yeah.
Everybody our age must have had a fight with a printer.
Yeah, everyone knows what it's like to be frustrated by a printer. share the experience. Brilliant video. Time now for our community question of the week. So last week's question, which Dave, is contest mode working again, or is that broken?
I've just taken us out of contest
mode. Taken us out of contest mode. Good, 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 good. So our question last week was, what do you wish that you'd fixed but you threw away? What was it? Why didn't you fix it? And what did you do with it? Nice, simple question. Dave, do you want to go first?
Yeah, let's go first. Happy Coding ZX says, I'm going to be a contrarian again, and he does like doing that, and say that given our hoarding tendencies, the question should have been, what piece of broken retro that have you kept for decades, hoping that someday you will learn to fix it?
That's not the question.
My answer is, I wonder if he's going to...
Hang on, you can't just make your own questions up. That's not the question of the week.
My answer is that I picked up a non-working Pioneer PX7 at a car boot sale about 25 years ago, and I've kept it in the far distant hope that someday I might know how to fix it. What about you?
Disqualified. So, it's not the question.
He wishes he'd fixed it.
He hasn't thrown it away.
I know.
Well, good luck with that. I hope you get that fixed at some point. Richard Cheers says, this one's an easy one for me. I was given a Voodoo 5500 video card to alpha test, and later, after a fair few mods, beta test for STB. I was allowed to keep it. and it became my primary gaming card for many years later. At some point, the caps went bad. I still kept it for years. However, shortly after being married, we went through a purge, and knowing that it didn't work, I didn't put up much of an argument when Claire suggested that being a hoarder wasn't one of my most admirable traits, and perhaps it should go. Boo, Claire, boo. Of course, knowing now that I could simply replace the caps with the skills I've been forced to learn in keeping my little hobby functioning and seeing the price of Voodoo 5500s, it really does make my decision sting a little. Yeah, that is top of the tree Voodoo card. Pretty rare. Grounds for divorce, Dave?
No, Claire's a very nice person. I wouldn't hear anything said about Claire. And Richard did agree to throwing it away, so it's not as if Claire threw it away behind
fine,
his back.
Fine, we'll let you off, Claire. Next answer.
Pajaco 6502. Back in the early 90s, with zero knowledge on how to repair computers, I was given a dead C64 black screen. I could probably diagnose and fix that in an afternoon now, but back then I couldn't. Worse still, I purchased a boxed C64 GS. So a C64 GS, that's the one
it's
with
the game system. It's a console.
Yeah. The pastel colours, isn't it?
No, you're thinking about the ZEX, the Atari.
Yeah. So the GS, did it not?
It's a very, it's almost like a Master System style shape, but grey. It's a very simple looking thing. But it's a C64 with no keyboard.
From a local computer shop for something daft like £10, maybe even less. Yet, back then, they were junk. He says, spoiler, they still are, just rarer. I then proceeded not only trash the C64 GS with my extremely poor soldering skills at the time, but I did pretty much the same to the C64 trying to get the chips out. So mine is a double whammy. One, I shouldn't even have tried. Two, I should have put them in the loft and kept them for 25 years, sold the GS for a massive profit and use it to buy spare parts for the C64, which I now do have the skills to fix.
Nice. Yeah. I would like a C64 GS at some point, but there you go. There's one in landfill somewhere. Thanks, Pajaco. Like a grey flattened Master System. It doesn't have the pyramid shape of the Master System and famously has some games that say, press any key to continue or to start the game, and there are no keys. There we go. Lots of other great answers in there. Tech Made Easies, our family's original Packard Bell 486 got boot sector virus. No one in our house was proficient in IT in 97. It ended up going up to landfill for a virus. No.
That's awful. I almost don't believe that.
Colony Activist threw away a Game Boy with a lovely custom paint job. Some more 486s in there from Flaps 1978. Lord Borak, Amstrad CPC 464. I must admit, I did once throw away a CPC 464 many, many, many years ago. Took it to the tip. And I actually did that thing when you fling the thing into the tip. You don't just place it, you know? Fling it. Hey, there you go, Amstrad. Nobody cares about you.
You thug.
Amiga 500 from Imaginary Swing. Wow, there are so many answers. Yeah. Gavin, my old Amiga 1000 sidecar. Oh, it had a 20 meg hard drive that failed and I ended up throwing it out to save storage. Still has his 1000 at least. And Snoo, a BBCB micro and two Laserdisc players that I rescued from the tip. Wish I'd kept them. Well, you took them out the tip. You had them for a bit. You tipped them. Don't feel too bad about that. Yeah. So thank you to everyone for participating. You can check out those answers and take part in this week's question of the week at our subreddit, reddit.com/r/thisweekinretro. And this week's question of the week is, how do you like to decelerate in modern life? Are there things that you could do quicker, but you choose not to? How do you apply a little digital mindfulness to your life? And no, happy coder, you cannot change the question.
I will be thoroughly looking forward to read your answers to find out if there's anything I can learn from it. We can all be a little bit happier in our existences, perhaps by sharing the wisdom.
Yeah, I'm looking for some tips. So please do share with us. And all the links to the stories we've discussed today are in the show notes, the links to Patreon, the links to everything else, Discord. You'll find them all in the show notes. Thank you again to Duncan for doing such a wonderful job of the editing. We're going to go and record the Q&A now, aren't we, for the patrons?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Cup of tea first, though.
Cup of tea, Q&A. We'll see you over there if you're an official twirler. If not, we'll see you same time next week. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
He's waving.
I'm waving. Neil's waving too. Bye-bye.
This Week in Retro was presented by Neil from RMC The Cave and Dave. It was produced by me, Duncan Stiles. The podcast version of the show is available through your favourite podcaster, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And the video version is available on the This Week in Retro YouTube channel.
Join our community subreddit at r/thisweekinretro to suggest and vote on the stories we cover on the show. If you watch This Week in Retro on YouTube, please give us a like and subscribe to help us reach new viewers.
If you enjoy our show and would like to support it, then please check out the link to our Patreon page in the show notes or description. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time for more up-to-date news for out-of-date tech.